Testing to see if the sound's on, right?
Now I'm recording.
Great. Fantastic.
I'm recording. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
How's everybody doing out there? How's everybody doing out there in listener land?
This is a very one-sided conversation.
Yep. It's me. It's Phil.
What is this?
Hey, everybody. I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And
it's Del Toro time.
It's Del Toro time. And we're back with the ecstasy of influence and our next monster movie. It's a monster marathon. Movies. Monsters movie. It's another monster movie.
Yep.
What is this episode's monster? I was going to say this week's, but it's not a weekly show. What is this episode's monster movie?
Creature from the Black Lagoon. Should we start this over?
Nah, we're good. Hey, everybody. I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And it's
Del Toro time.
It's Del Toro time.
We're supposed to say that together.
Yeah, but you didn't say it's.
I don't. Oh, I never say it's. You say it's, and then I join in with the Del Toro time.
I thought we both said, and it's Del Toro time was how it goes. And it's Del Toro time. Hey, everybody. I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And it's Del Toro time. That is not what we do. You always say it's.
I can't.
Hey, everybody, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And
it's Del Toro time.
It's Del Toro time. We're doing The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yep.
We're doing The Creature from the Black Lagoon. I was wrong in the last episode, by the way. I was wondering if Clint Eastwood was in this movie. He's not. He's in the next movie, The Return of the Creature, which is just called The Return of the Creature because it's not from a black lagoon anymore. And what's funny is The Creature from the Black Lagoon is just called The Creature. Like, that's its name. People always call it The Creature from the Black Lagoon, but it's just The Creature.
Well, it's like how people call Frankenstein's monster Frankenstein.
Well, I know that, but, like, The Creature is just, huh? Like,
the monster.
The creature. The man. The creature.
The lad.
There were three Creature from the Black Lagoon movies. The original and then two sequels. Return of the Creature and I don't remember the third one. I was just looking at it today. It has the worst title. I always forget it exists.
The Creature in Space.
It's like, there's like Creature of the Black Lagoon, Return of the Creature, and then like, He Who Walks Gravely. It's like some stupid title that you're like, oh wait, is this a Creature from the Black Lagoon? Like, it's just, it's almost sounds unrelated.
He Who Walks on Gravy.
He Who Walks on the Gravy. Creature of the Black Lagoon, this is a Universal Monsters movie.
Monster flick.
Yes, with a very distinctive creature design. I don't know anything about this movie except that I saw it probably early on Sunday morning when I was a kid. That's it. It's a classic. It's not long.
And, good.
And it may have inspired Guillermo del Toro.
Maybe. Who knows?
Who knows? We haven't watched it yet, so there's no way of knowing.
Yep.
Be on the lookout, though, for many of your favorite monster tropes, such as damsel in distress, colonialism, white man being better than other people.
Is that a horror movie trope or just
a true like a thing that happens in movies?
Yeah.
kind of a horror movie trope where it's like we're going into this spooky land to tame the land, and then we'll encounter horrors because white people are always the victims of other people.
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
100%. So
that's a true fact.
Be on the lookout for those tropes.
Anyone who says otherwise is fake news.
Fake news. Be on the lookout for sort of a pseudo King Kong, like storyline.
I don't think I've ever seen King Kong.
You know the basic gist of it. People go to another land. There is a monster. The monster falls for the beautiful woman.
I thought like there was a scene where like the monster was on Big Ben or something.
The monster is not on Big Ben because Big Ben is in London.
Yeah, I know, but isn't there like a scene in something where there's a giant monkey and they're on a tower and they're holding a woman in their
hand? You were thinking of the Empire State Building in New York City, New York.
Right, okay.
That King Kong does climb at the end of King Kong. Also climbs at the end of 1970-something's King Kong and climbs at the end of 2000-whatever's King Kong. He pretty much climbs the Empire State Building.
That's because that's like the classic like
no,
scene.
No, wait. He doesn't climb the Empire State Building in the 70s once. He climbs the World Trade Center.
He can't climb that anymore.
That is true. History happened. And in fact, in the poster for the 1970s Dino De Laurentiis' King Kong, he is standing astride the two towers, one foot on each one. King Kong's not that big. He's not the size of half of a skyscraper. He is just a large monkey man. This isn't about King Kong. This is about a fish man named...
The Creature.
From...
Nowhere.
The Black Lagoon.
That's not his name, though.
In this one, it is. In this one, his name is The Creature from The Black Lagoon. We're going to watch The Creature from The Black Lagoon. Hey, everybody, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie, and we've already done this.
It's The Ecstasy of Influence. We're going to watch The Creature from The Black Lagoon. Let's
Yay!
Get it rolling! Here comes the man. He's the gill man. He's the fishing man. He's covered in green, covered in scales. That's the theme song from 1954's The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes, it is.
Welcome back, everyone. We just watched The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
We definitely just watched it.
We just watched it this very second. It popped out the tape from my VCR, put it in my car-shaped rewinder, returned it to Blockbuster Video. Then they thanked me much for getting it in on time. Got a free rental out of it. The Creature from the Black Lagoon. Everyone's favorite monsterman. And first impressions.
Good
movie.
Good.
No, we actually sat and enjoyed this whole film
mm-hmm.
in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike The Thing.
From Another World.
Which was a drippy mess.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess the Gill Man is his own kind of drippy mess. He's dripping. When in his life's a mess, doesn't have any friends.
Feel like if he stopped trying to murder people, he would probably have more friends.
He didn't try to murder people. He successfully murdered people, many of them, with his bare hands, could throw people through walls.
Mm-hmm.
So we were looking forward to watching this, and it paid off. Like, we actually had fun, enjoyed ourselves. Better or worse movie than The Thing from Another World?
It's going to take me a little bit to think about that. I don't know how to...
What does this movie do better than The Thing from
Everything.
Another World? This movie had likable characters
mm-hmm.
whose motivations I could follow.
Mm-hmm.
It had a coherent plot.
Mm-hmm.
It was simple. It mm-hmm. only had as many characters as you needed to know
mm-hmm.
and not like 15 who stood around in the background. It had an interesting looking monster who did more than just lumber. And it was good cinematography. It looked nice.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice looking flick. Also originally in
3D. I thought you were talking about a different language. And I was like, what are you talking about?
I can't think of a language that begins with a TH. Thermopylaean. Thermopylaean.
Thespian, the language of theater.
The language of the theater, which is what we are dealing with here. The theater, directed by Jack Arnold. So what do you know about the history of 3D motion pictures?
Very, very little.
Very little. Well, would it surprise you?
I should probably mention I didn't ever get around to watching that video.
That's fine. So this movie, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, was actually pretty important for Universal Monsters. Not just to sort of bring back the Universal Monster, which had kind of gone a little sour by this point, but for the
okay.
I'm very fine. I just hit my elbow. For the resurgence of the relatively newish art of the 3D film. And they were really pushing to get 3D motion pictures out there. And they had done It Came from Outer Space, same director, which was a big hit, also in 3D.
I've heard of that movie.
A very famous science fiction film. Came out the year before. And Creature from the Black Lagoon was kind of them saying, like, all right, let's do something else. Let's do another 3D motion picture. But this one we're going to do underwater a lot of. So we got to come up with some new tech. We've got to make it just really pop. And I didn't know this until I was doing some reading. The 3D in this movie was like revolutionary for its time. And apparently if you watch it today, it's still the Blu-ray of this offers a 3D version with like polarized lenses. Apparently it is beautiful and it pops because they were like, let's not go for like reaching out of the screen like most 3D does. They're like, let's sell it on its depth. So like the original ads were like deep, deep, deep 3D.
Yeah, we know. We watched the original ads.
Yes, and that was why. Because it was supposed to be like you can reach into the like you're underwater, so you can just sort of see how vast the sea is. So apparently those underwater sequences there were so many of were incredible in 3D.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it was just like, oh my gosh, it's like I'm really under the water. And of course, to create a camera that can be used under the water and also film in 3D was like no small thing. I read a lot about 3D. Well, I never thought about it. And when you think of it, like both of those both of those reels, because, you know, it's two separate cameras that are shooting in 3D. Both of those has to be perfectly synced up. And that's hard enough to do with, like, two digital cameras. Back when they were using film, back in the 50s when it was all janky, like, if things got, like, one frame off, the 3D effect is ruined. And so then they were like, and we're going to put it underwater. It was just like, that was nuts. So
they did it really well, though.
They did it really well. So what is The Creature from the Black Lagoon about? Why don't you give us a little rundown of the plot of the lagoon?
A monster falls in love with a woman and then kills a bunch of people.
Okay, well, let's go a little bit more in depth as to what happens in The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
There's a woman.
Well, it starts off with
a man.
The discovery of a
hand
in a
wall.
But not a regular wall.
A rock wall.
Uh-huh. And not just a hand.
That's nature-based.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fishman hand.
Right. A bone. Mm-hmm. Bone hand.
A fossil.
Yes,
if some you will.
Might call it. They find a fossil man's hand. a man's fossilized hand. A fishman's hand. Or some
a
kind of
a fishman's fossilized hand.
Yes. Just the bones.
My autobiography.
They find just the bones. In a way that you do not ever find fossilized bones. Just sort of sticking out of a wall. It looked like a skeleton man
yes.
had been reaching through a wall, and then the wall like collapsed on him, and mm-hmm. only his skeleton hand was sticking out.
Yeah.
Yeah. How? No one had ever just... Apparently it was just sitting there for thousands of years or something. Like, I don't know how old that fossil was supposed to be.
It was supposed to be from some sort of dinosaur time period.
Like the Devonian era, the
yeah.
Cambrian era.
It just sounded... I know that whatever they said, like whatever era they said sounded made up.
Most science sounds made up. I mean, honestly, it's all made up. It's just there to keep us complacent. The Devonian. It was the Devonian period. And so they decide to go to a...
science lab.
Mm-hmm. There's a science lab. How do they get from science lab to the water? Like, how do they get from a... Why do they go out to Brazil?
Well, he just went out to Brazil because he wanted to.
Who did?
The old man. That's the beginning of the movie. He was like... I bet there's something there.
Oh, right. He was just investigating.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, because he like found the hand and he was like, secure this area. I'm going to go show this hand to people.
And he has two buddies with him.
Yeah, two Brazilian buddies who aren't long for this world.
No.
No, they get discovered by...
Okay, well, first we have to talk about the fact that this creature has been here for supposedly a very long time.
Yeah, we don't get any history on him, like any solid history.
And hasn't like done anything yet.
Yeah.
But just decides, oh, you took the hand? Well, now I'm going to kill everyone.
It's set up kind of like the mummy where it's like they've desecrated a something and now...
But it was already desecrated because we
right.
find out later that the wall had collapsed at some point and the rest of the body had been washed towards the pit.
Right. The idea is that the guy who discovered the bones is going to get his scientist friends to find the rest of the skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
And he leaves his compatriots there to guard the fossil site.
Not that anyone else knows where it is.
Right. And they are quickly dispatched by the gill man who comes
yes.
up out of the water. And you're right. Like, is he like a new gill man? Is he supposed to be thousands of years old? We know he's incredibly strong.
We do know that there is like the legend of the like Black Lagoon in the area is that people have like gone missing like
right.
when they go down there.
But we never learn like if he's like the only gill man or what. I mean, obviously it's impossible for there to exist just one of an animal.
I think that there's multiple, and I think that we see multiple throughout the movie. Mm. Because we see a few of them get shot.
So you think we're not seeing one gill man. Your theory is that we are seeing multiple gill men.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Hadn't thought about that. That may explain why the gill man looks different underwater than he does above water.
Or maybe that's just the costume.
Just the costume.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. So our key players are doctors David Reed, played by Richard Carlson, Kay Lawrence, played by Julie Adams.
She was great.
Dr. Mark Williams, who's kind of the bad guy, played by Richard Denning.
He's not really a bad guy. He's the antagonist, kind of.
He's
the guy,
yeah.
He's an antagonist.
Right.
He's kind of, he is capitalism.
Yes, he's there just
to represent the capitalistic nature of science.
Yes,
and also make money.
Come heck or high water, he's gonna.
Are we not allowed to say hell on this
I like to say I like to keep it clean for myself personally.
Okay.
So they go to find this thing. They're all sort of like most everyone just wants to like find the rest of this skeleton, which is washed down into the Black Lagoon.
Mm-hmm.
Julie Adams' character is just there because she's in love with the doctor, I guess.
No,
because
she's the rock person, I thought.
Right, but she doesn't do a lot. She swims
because
a lot.
No one will let her do anything.
She swims a whole lot.
They're like, why don't you stay up here while we do all the science stuff? And she's like, what?
She wears a very nice one-piece swimsuit. I discovered that was not only was the creature from the Black Lagoon designed for this movie, but that swimsuit was designed specifically for this movie. It did not exist. The costume person created that swimsuit to look as good as possible on her. Also decided to make it white, which meant that she had to be extraordinarily careful when putting it on because her whole body was covered in camera makeup. And then she had to put a white swimsuit on without getting any makeup on the swimsuit.
Why don't you just put it on before
you put on the makeup? Well, that would be even worse because then you could smear makeup on it. Oh. Why didn't they just not make a white swimsuit?
Because then it wouldn't represent her purity.
She is pure. She is pure, except for the fact she's obviously like doing it with the man.
Is it obvious? Because they can't even like hug without it being really, really awkward.
They kiss a couple of times. And back in the 1950s, kissing made babies. So they're at the Black Lagoon. And you're kind of right. Like most of this movie is just the creature trying to kidnap her and them trying to get rid of the creature or get it out of the way long enough. Because like they don't want to kill it. They just want to like knock it out so they can like
get out.
Right. Because the creature traps them.
Mm-hmm.
It sets up a fallen log or a fallen tree. Which they have to move. It's a long sequence. There's a lot of like sequences. Like this is a movie of like once they get to the Black Lagoon, they're just stuck in the Black Lagoon and they are trying to get out. And it's just a series of the creature gets on board, kills someone. They chase the creature away. They put fizzy pellets into the water and knock out all the fish. They capture the creature. They lose the creature. The creature kidnaps the woman. The creature loses the woman. They shoot the creature gets away, the creature comes back, the creature's okay. It goes around and around and around like this until it kills Mark, the heavy, the bad guy.
The bad guy.
Or the antagonist.
The capitalistic.
How does it kill him?
It just sort of grabs him.
It ruins one guy's face.
Yeah, that was on the boat.
Yeah.
It kills Mark underwater.
Right, right. Well, while he's scuba diving, it like, what does it do? It just like...
It like kind of grabs his like...
Yeah, face. And he's dead. One thing that they made a huge deal about in the very beginning of the film, which I was sure was going to pay off and then it didn't pay off, was they make a big deal about not getting the bends. And so you go diving and you have to like go up the rope. And when you get to a certain point, you have to wait there for like a minute or 5 minutes before you can go all the way to the surface. And they emphasize that a couple of times so much that I was like, that's going to come into play. Like someone's going to be being chased by the creature and they're going to get stuck because they can't rise to the surface for another 5 minutes. And boy, that's going to be a tense scene while they're waiting for their, and then it didn't happen.
I feel like that would have just added a pointless scene to the movie.
Right. But I think that would have been a neat, they set it up and eventually everyone just ignores it. They're like,
I think that like, that was the point. Like they aren't worried. They're either facing certain death from this creature or they're getting really ill.
I would have liked to have seen that addressed. I guess is what I'm saying. Like someone has to escape the creature and then they get really ill. They get the bends or something. Like maybe it would have been hard to sell, but I want that. I want to see people getting the bends in my monster movie.
They didn't have that much time for this movie.
They really didn't. It's a quick film. The monster ends up kidnapping her and then they chase the monster through a grotto. It basically just ends with the monster getting shot and then floating away.
So I know that there are sequels.
Yes.
But at the end of this movie, that monster is definitely 100% dead and there's no way you can convince me otherwise.
Yeah, you see the monster falling. The monster was supposed to be dead, like per the actual script. Like they kill the monster. There was, I guess, talk originally about making the monster live with more of a sequel hook. But they decided not to go with that.
I mean, that just adds to that there's more than one of these fish creatures out there.
Yeah, it's so weird. So there's a lot of things that went into the make. This was a big, important movie for Universal. Like they needed a success. They needed a hit. And boy, did they get one. This movie was super successful. However, this movie was not the first appearance of the Gill Man. Do you know what the first appearance of the Gill Man was?
No.
It was in the TV special, Abbott and Costello Meet the Creature from the Black Lagoon, which was a made-for-TV special. It was like an hour-long special with Abbott and Costello doing their Abbott. Because by this point, Abbott and Costello had met all the Universal monsters in their movies. And Abbott and Costello, it's just like special. And then they're on Universal like lot, and they're looking at all the makeup and the costumes. And the Creature from the Black Lagoon shows up. That was how Universal promoted their movie. They were like, let's do a TV special and we'll show the monster to get people interested. And it worked. This like crazy looking, the Creature of the Black Lagoon doesn't look like any other Universal monster.
No.
It is a very special creation.
Yes.
Created by, I'm going to pull up her name here because she doesn't get half of the credit that she deserves. Millicent Patrick. Millicent Patrick was the first female animator at Walt Disney Studios, and she designed the Gill Man costume head for the Creature from the Black Lagoon. That look, the face with the gills and everything, that was all her. They used her in promotion because she was also amazingly beautiful. And so she was if you look at Millicent Patrick, you'll just see photos of her posing with the Creature from the Black Lagoon's makeup, or at her animator's like desk, like drawing the creature. Like there's great footage of her like actually sketching the creature, and you're like, oh wow, she's really good. Unfortunately,
she died young.
No, she did not die young. Good. But unfortunately, she did not receive, for many years, her name was basically erased from the history of the Creature from the Black Lagoon by makeup artist Bud Westmore, who took credit for the creature as the years went by. I guess what I got from the stuff I was reading and seeing was, everyone talks about who created the creature, but you got to remember that like there was the person who designed the creature, who did like the concept for it. Then there's people who actually built the suit. Then there's people who built the masks. And then there's people who like did the makeup and made it work like for filming. There's all these people who went into creating this monster. It wasn't just one person. And Bud rose to the top. He was like, nah, it was me. But there was like sculptors involved. There was designers involved. And unfortunately, Millicent Patrick faded into obscurity for a long time. So let's give her a shout out right now.
Woo.
Woo woo. The creature was played by two actors.
Yes. So was everyone else.
Huh?
Remember, because everyone else who was swimming?
Oh, yes. Well, yes. Well. Like whom?
Like everyone else.
What's her face? The woman.
Mm-hmm.
Julie Adams. Did all of her own stunts.
Really?
She did all of her own stunts.
She's got a really great swimmer's body.
She does. She did her own swimming. It was very cold some days. Filming was in two locations. They filmed in Los Angeles and in Florida in an actual like swamp.
Fun.
They were scouting for a swamp, and while they were scouting for the swamp, there was this young college age guy who was like, I'll show you around. And he took them diving to show them like the end, so they could film some like test footage underwater to see if the location was good. And a few days later, after they left, he gets a call. His name is Riku Browning, and they said, hey, do you want to play the Gill Man in our movie? Because you swim really well and you know the area. And he's like, I don't know what a Gill Man is. I have no interest in acting, but sure, I'll play your Gill Man. So the Gill Man was played by Ben Chapman for all the scenes above water, and then Riku Browning for all the scenes below water.
Is that why he could hold his breath for a really, really long time?
He had to hold his breath for, I think, 4 minutes at a time because they couldn't put oxygen on the suit and they didn't want the Gill Man to be seen exhaling because he had gills. So they were like, you got to swim without exhaling. Like, you just got to take a breath and we got to get these shots. And he was like, all right. He had no goggles on. Like, he couldn't protect his eyes from the water because he couldn't see well enough with them on. And he did his own. Yeah, he was the stunt guy. He is also, Riku Browning, the only surviving Universal monster. The only person who ever played a Universal monster is still alive. I think that's pretty cool. You can meet him at Monster Cons. Like, if you go to a monster con, like a horror convention,
okay.
Rico Browning is frequently there signing.
We're going to get a news notification tomorrow saying he's dead.
He's dead. Sorry, everyone. Because he was young when this was made.
Yeah.
Like, he was. I mean, I guess if he was in his early 20s, that was still like 50, 60 something. I guess he's not young anymore.
How old is he now?
How old is Rico Browning now? Rico Browning today, let's see, he was born in, well, I guess he's 87. All right, well, I guess he's 87 years old. He's not a whippersnapper anymore. But he's a handsome guy. There's a picture of him. Handsome man, handsome young man. But I guess that was 1950. That was a long time ago. He also played the creature in the three Creature from the Black Lagoon movies.
He's like the Doug Jones of those movies.
He really was, except that he didn't play the monster above the water. He only played him in the water.
Well, why don't we talk about the fact that they had to make two costumes?
Why'd they have to make two costumes?
Because one of them was really short and one of them was really tall.
Which one was really short?
Was it Swimmer Guy?
Yes.
Yes.
And so that's why...
They look different above and underwater.
Because not only were they different heights, their heads were like apparently violently different shapes. And they had to design two... I mean, if you look at the chest plate where his ridges are, in Rico Browning's costume, there's fewer because they actually had to like bring it in because his chest was smaller. And
well, they did hire some like a swimmer guy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So for the, and I think it works like for the above ground giant creature, it works to have a tall, strong person playing the role. But then he gets into the water and he's like.
Swimmer fast.
He really is. And so
because like if you look at the creature above water, like there's no way that thing's an underwater creature.
Mm-hmm.
It's way too bulky.
Yeah.
But underwater, you're like, yeah.
It's like looking at a penguin. You're like, there's no way this thing is like lightning fast underwater and moves with like the grace of 1,000 electric eels. But then it does. Let's talk about those beautiful underwater sequences.
Let's.
They're beautiful.
Yep.
They're underwater.
Yes.
There's a very famous sequence between I can never think of her name, Julie Adams and the creature.
She's a very simple name.
Julie Adams. It is a basic name. It is names 101.
Yep.
There's a sequence between her and the creature. It's very long, but it's just her swimming, enjoying herself, and the creature just sort of mirroring her under the water.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say this is a scene about sex.
Great.
Thoughts?
I disagree.
because it's filmed like a love scene.
I don't. Okay. There is some stuff with this movie that I just don't understand.
Like what?
Like how the creature's supposed to be in love with her. I get like that's the gist of it. But there's no, like, biological reason the creature would be in love with her.
Well, I guess, okay, so I think when we first started talking about this last episode or so, I said there was going to be some weird racial stuff going on. And I think that's one of them. It's that idea of beautiful white woman shows up in non-white area and the natives are going to go nuts for her. It's the King Kong thing.
Yeah.
King Kong was offered... a million women before Faye Ray showed up, but because she's white and beautiful and blonde, he's going to like go heads over heels for the white woman. And that's kind of the same thing with the Gill Man. They're in Brazil. This non-Brazilian woman shows up and he just wants to have her.
Yeah, but like there's King Kong, who's a monkey.
Oh, I see.
Which is
saying.
Closer to being a human than this fish being.
But the fish being at least is shaped like the fish being is shaped more like a person than the King Kong.
And
maybe
they wouldn't be able to reproduce.
Maybe he's not interested in having kids.
That's not okay. But if we're going with, there's only one creature in this lagoon. If we're going with that, he would be interested in that because he was like, my species needs to stay alive because that's a biological response for a lot of people.
Okay. So maybe because he has no females around, that's like he registers her as like the closest thing to female.
Maybe, but it still doesn't like.
I mean, the creature. So, hello, it's Del Toro time. So the creature from The Shape of Water also falls in love with a human woman.
Yeah, that just seemed different.
I guess they had an emotional connection.
Yeah.
Like they got to know each other.
Like she reciprocated his feelings.
Yeah.
And but, they could communicate with each other.
Right. This one, yeah, there's no... She responds to the creature with nothing but revulsion.
Mm-hmm.
Or screaming.
It's a lot of screaming.
There's also a lot of... Sun, sun, sun! Like, there's this... The creature's theme, I can't remember exactly how it goes. It's like four sharp... like notes that I didn't really notice, but then once I was doing my research and they were like, so what happened was the producer stepped in and we're like, we really like that really loud, really shrill creature theme that you're doing. It has to play every time the creature shows up on screen. I think it plays about 100 times. It's this one, like, it interrupts other score. Like, other score will be playing, and then the creature will surface, and you're just, it'll be like, do 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 front, 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 front. And you're like, oh, no, why did you do that? Because this movie had, I think, four film scorers. I think it had four composers contribute to the score. One guy who did the like, pretty music, one guy who did the action music, one guy who did the monster music. Like, it was this.
And then another guy who did just the creature score.
Front, front, front. It, I guess that was common back in the day, but there's bits of music from other movies in it.
Honestly, I didn't notice the music.
That's what they said. They said the Creature from the Black Lagoon score is so well done that most people don't notice that they're just hearing a lot of recycled music and stuff. That's why it's considered a classic film score, because they're like, it works. They made it work. And I think they do make it work. I think this movie does work.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheesy in places.
Well, yeah, but it's an old movie.
It's an old movie. The monster sometimes looks amazing. Sometimes in those close-ups, his face looks a little...
I mean, but it's not supposed to look attractive.
It's not supposed to look attractive. Sometimes the mouth is moving up and down, and I was like, oh, cut it out.
That was like it above water.
Yeah, originally this movie was supposed to be in color. They actually filmed some test footage in color.
I'm glad it wasn't in color, because I wouldn't have been able to take it seriously at all.
Yeah, they were going. I think the issue was they were going to have trouble bringing it in under budget and in 3D if they did it in color. And so they were like, nah. But that's why people started thinking, that's why the image, one of the reasons the image of the bright green creature with the red lips became well known.
A meme.
Because of that original footage. However, according to Julie Adams, the actual creature, the costume, was more like deep moss colored, and its lips were not that red.
That makes a lot more sense.
She said it looked very animal, like just it looked like something that would come out of a swamp.
Yeah, because, I mean, it evolved to survive.
And she thinks it's weird that all the merchandise and stuff was so, she's like, it's always portrayed as way too neon green, like bright green.
Way too garish.
Yeah, I think that's the exact term she used. She said it's always portrayed as very garish. When in real life, it was very subtle. And
because it wouldn't make sense for the creature to be bright green.
Right. In Brazil, like surviving under the... So I have a brief correction to make. Ginger Stanley. I don't want her to go uncredited here. You mentioned that there was a stunt person. Ginger Stanley actually did do some underwater stunts for this movie.
Okay.
It was Julie Adams. It was Julie Adams who did a lot of the swimming, but Ginger Stanley did a lot of double work for her. So a little correction on my part. I had the note right here, and I totally ignored it. You were correct. I guess when you couldn't see her face, it may have been this blonde woman.
That makes more sense.
More sense.
Because I highly doubt Julie Adams was a trained swimmer.
Right. Yeah, there is some lovely swimming in this. A little bit. Just let's roll back. The basis for this movie, the legend goes that the producer was at a dinner party when the cinematographer Gabriel Figueroa mentioned the myth of this, like, these fish people who lived in the Amazon River. And William Aland was like, I'm going to sit on this idea until the right opportunity comes along. And then in the 1950s, he was like, I'm going to make that Fishman movie. This is the perfect opportunity to make that Fishman movie. But it reminds me of a conversation you and I were having a while back about just Fishmans in general, like the notion of
half, fish lads,
fish people, like the
mermaids,
selkies, any kind of like half
sirens.
Human. Yeah. What is the deal with fish people?
The same deal there is with aliens. There's people on Earth, on the ground. Mm-hmm. There must be people underwater.
Yeah. Does every culture like have its like
pretty much
myth
yeah.
of the fish person?
I'm assuming that if when someone disappeared while swimming or drowned, it was often blamed on bad fish things.
Bad fish.
Well, like, because the water has always been like in the past was always considered unclean in Europe.
Yeah.
Because it was unclean. Traveling by boat, you saw some things that maybe you couldn't explain. Like beluga whales have knees.
Right.
So they could have easily been mistaken for mer people.
And even in like, you know, like in Japan, there's like the kappas who live mm-hmm. in the rivers. I guess every culture has its idea of like not just water creatures, but like river monsters.
Yeah.
Things that are like, here's this body of water that we rely on for life. Of course,
water
there's
spirits,
mm-hmm.
Water nymphs from.
Right. And it's, you know, like we can't explore underwater, mm-hmm. like especially back in the day, like you can't just dive in and take a look around. So there's, I guess there's that feeling of like helplessness, especially if whatever lives in the water has the ability to come on land.
Yeah.
Because we don't have the opposite.
Mm-hmm. And then there's like the mermaids luring men to their deaths in the sea and sirens and things like that as well.
I can see what I mean. It's quite clear to me that this movie would have a lot of meaning for Guillermo del Toro.
I wonder what we see that in ever. I don't know.
I believe that he actually offered, I think he tried to get a remake of Creature from the Black Lagoon made with Universal, and they said nah.
That was dumb of them.
I believe that's the order it went in, and so he took a lot of the ideas he had for that and worked them into Shape of Water, which, I don't know, when put next to each other, I think they make two very nice complementary films.
Because mm-hmm. it's definitely not a remake of Creature from the Black Lagoon.
No,
but it has a lot of similar elements,
mm-hmm.
And is also very beautiful, and also has insane capitalist guy.
Right, who does say something in this movie about wanting to study the creature. Not for weapons reasons, like in The Shape of Water, but for like, there's a reason, I can't remember, he gives a reason for wanting to study this creature. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, not unlike what they were doing with Shape of Water. Like it's, there are themes of colonialism and imperialism that go hand in hand with this. The notion of the other, the notion of the interspecies, like I understand you, you understand me. Like, I feel if this movie had been made in the 70s, like the remake of King Kong was made in the 70s, they really would have emphasized the creature's relationship with the woman more.
With Julie Adams more.
The woman Julie Adams, Kay Lawrence, who does kiss the man. She does kiss Richard Carlson.
Multiple times.
So you know that they have a good relationship.
She gets kind of fed up with him at some points in the movie, though.
She does. He's not like the perfect man, which I appreciate. He's not just like the dashing hero, although he comes across as a little bit of a dashing hero at the end. Did you know that when the creature was carrying her, he couldn't see and she couldn't see because her eyes were closed and he accidentally hit her head on the set?
Great story.
Apparently, it's one of those stories that gets told about the creature. The story it gets told is he hit her head so hard she like got knocked out and they had to stop filming. And she says, no, he just like barely bumped her head and was like, oh, I'm so sorry. We're like, what happened? And she was like, you hurt my head. And then they kept filming. Like, it's a story. It's one of those Hollywood stories. Did you know the creature bumped Julie Adams' head?
Great.
And, yeah, so.
That was a great story.
She bumped head. There are, okay, if you want to know more about the creature from the Black Lagoon, there is a documentary, a short documentary that Ollie did not watch.
No.
Called Back to the Black Lagoon. And it came out in, I think the 80s. Or the early 90s, and it's available on YouTube if you want to watch it. And it has got some great information about the making of The Creature from the Black Lagoon. It was super successful when it came out. It made a ton of money for the studio. It spawned two sequels, Revenge of the Creature and The Creature Walks Among Us, in which the creature is caught on fire. And
wasn't the creature caught on fire in this one too?
But he catches on bad fire in the third one. And it's so bad that they have to perform surgery on him. And his scales fall off. And he puts on clothes and becomes a slick man. Because they're like, his scales have fallen away. Underneath, the fish man was a more human man. Because that's how evolution works.
Yes.
How evolution works, for those of you who aren't familiar with the concept, is if you took off my skin, underneath it would be a more primitive man. And on down, and you'd find like a monkey, and then a smaller monkey, and then like a shark.
Or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it goes up. That's how people evolve. They just shed their skin like snakes every like a million years.
That's right. they found a man underneath his fish skin. So I guess, yeah, so I don't know.
I don't want to say that. No, because they're about the same on us, on their evolution scale.
Right.
See, they can clearly communicate with each other.
Are they smarter than us?
I don't know. He seems pretty smart.
I guess they don't need to be that smart. They just live in the water. Like, and they're strong.
Yeah.
So that he's got that going for him.
And the weird thing to me was like, oh, they haven't evolved for millions of years. And I'm like, how do you know that?
Right. You haven't even dated this. The arm was just sticking out of a wall. Like, it could have been put there yesterday. Like, it was, that's not how fossils work. Walls don't fall down and whole skeletons come out. Like, unless you buried some, like, okay, if I killed someone and I poured them into a wall, like I poured a wall around them. And built
like
it,
cement.
Like cement. Then yes. Eventually their flesh would decay. There would be a cavity left full of bones, and that could cause the wall to lose its structure and fall down because it would have like a air pocket in it. Mm-hmm. Yes, that could happen. That's not what they're saying happened in this movie. They're saying that the side of the mountain collapsed. There was a landslide, and then this fossil was in it.
But the hand was like sticking out like this.
It was poking out.
So unless the hand is like attached via the knuckles to the back of the creature, right, that doesn't make any sense.
There's no tendons. Nothing's holding it together. Take a skeleton hand. Like if you go to Walmart or Michael's and buy.
Don't go to Walmart.
Buy an arm, like a Halloween skeleton arm, and then take the end of it and stick it into some drywall. That's how they found. That's how they find the fossil in the beginning of this movie. It's just there it is, and it's just just loosey goosey. There's the hand. Hands, a million year old skeleton.
That thing would have turned to dust.
Or you know, just not be connected. It would be embedded in the rock.
Like,
right, like it would be in the rock. Like that's what a fossil is. It's.
And how did the creature even get in the rock in the first place?
Well, it's not like dinosaurs climbed into rocks.
Okay, but we're going with the fact that this creature was upset because they took the skeleton hand of the other creature, which means that it has to have some sort of connection to it.
They never say that the creature's upset because they took the skeleton hand. We're just inferring that.
Well, why else would it just suddenly come out of the water and start murdering people?
Maybe it just murders people who were there. Maybe they just didn't know.
But they were there. They stated that they had been there for a while.
That's true. I guess they shouldn't have moved that skeleton hand. Maybe the rest of the skeleton body washed into the Black Lagoon and it scared the creature because he's scared of skeletons.
We all have a skeleton inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we're inside the skeleton.
It's inside of us. That's exactly how it works.
We're the brain, though.
That's true.
So technically,
we're in a skull. We're in a skull suit.
Zipped up in a flesh suit.
Mm-hmm. So you are hiding in bones, and the bones are hiding in a mountain of skin.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Halloween, everyone.
It has to be my birthday before it's Halloween.
That's true. Your birthday is coming up.
It is.
Send presents.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's weird. We're talking about it as if it's a little problem. Like, it's not a bad movie.
No, it's a great movie.
It's very fun and very fast. And there's some, it's creepy in places. And if you watch it knowing that it used to be in 3D, there's a lot of great, like, the hand is reaching out. Like, there are moments like that in it, but it's not overblown.
No.
We're
just stuck on this one part because we think it's hilarious.
Right. You can find this movie on DVD or Blu-ray. It was restored beautifully. onto Blu-ray. The sound's apparently a little muddy, but the Blu-ray restoration is hailed. It is in 3D. You can watch it in 3D with like on a large screen TV, I guess, if you have one. That's how it works. That's how movies work. You watch them on screens. I highly recommend picking up a copy. It's part of the they released also as part of the like Universal Monsters collection. Not a whole lot of special features. That documentary I mentioned is on there. You can get, there's a DVD that has commentary, but I don't know if the commentary is available on the Blu-ray. I think it might be, because why wouldn't they put it on there? The creature originally did look ridiculous. If you watch that documentary, you can see the original design for the head back when it was supposed to look a little more like an amphibian and was sleek. It looked more like one of the fish people from SpongeBob SquarePants. Those sort of dome heads with a shocked expression on its face. Imagine the creature in the Black Lagoon, but without its gills or fins or anything. Just sort of this like dome head with a gaping mouth. Looked a little ridiculous. There was talk of using it as a female fish monster in a future film, but the female monster never showed up. Instead, we got to see the Gill Man wearing people clothes in a later movie.
With just flesh. No scales anymore.
Yep. No scales. So I recommend picking up a copy of The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Mm-hmm.
But what did Guillermo del Toro have to say about this movie?
I like it. Let's make some more fish people.
Hold on one second. I'll tell you. And apparently he never recommended this movie on Twitter. So
great.
You just take it as read that Guillermo del Toro really likes this movie. Anything else to add about The Creature from the Black Lagoon?
No.
as we speak, as we talk, on this recording date of...
22nd.
Is the 22nd of August right now. Today they announced that Guillermo del Toro has begun filming...
They're going to say he was dead or something.
His next movie, or his next production. Is he directing it? I don't know, but Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I'm so excited.
So I guess we have that to look forward to next year.
Next year?
Well, yeah, it's going to take a while for it to get done.
Well, yeah, I know. I was expecting it to take longer.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be out next year. Wait, our next movie. What's our next movie?
I don't know.
I'll give you a hint.
Dinosaurs. Jurassic Park.
No.
Godzilla.
Godzilla, the original Gojira from 1950 whatever, Japan. We've both seen this movie, so we won't even have to guess if we're going to like it or not.
Yeah, it's great. I hope that... it's a shame, though, because I already got all of my witty commentary out on it the first time I saw it.
Yeah, it's been years. It's literally been years.
But remember I made that great joke?
That wasn't even for this Godzilla movie.
No, though. But it was another Godzilla movie.
We will talk about that and more next time when we review Godzilla. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And we'll see you when...
It's Del Toro time.